Real Talk Real Muslims is a podcast by two young Muslims who talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of life as a young Muslim today.
Welcome back to Real Talk Real Muslims, a podcast where we share our experiences as first-generation American Muslims and where we aim to connect with other young Muslims to let them know that they are not alone in their struggles. This is Rawan.
And this is Rand. Okay, guys, so we're back with another Taboo Series episode, and this is the last episode in our Taboo Series, so we're really excited to wrap this up, and we hope that you guys, like, benefited from this series. So the last episode is the gender relations episode, and we got a lot of feedback from you guys about this episode, so we sat down with Yasmin and Hadi today, and we just talked to her about the questions that you guys asked us, and we're really excited to see what you guys think about this episode, so we'll just get right into it.
Hi, everybody. My name is Yasmin. I'm Yaz Guru on Instagram, and I am a mother, lawyer, comedian, and relationship consultant. I made up that term. It's out of thin air. And the reason I did is because I realized that people needed to consult with individuals who had some background in relationship advice. I am a retired matchmaker. I matchmade for almost 14 years and had alhamdulillah, some successes along the way. And I learned a lot about what makes people tick. So that's what I do. I do relationship advice on Instagram. Some funny videos too, but mostly relationship advice. Yeah.
Like, I love your relationship advice segments, like, especially with your husband. I'm not even married, but I love watching Marry Mondays. Yeah. Like, they're just so amazing and they're so funny all the time. But, yeah. Basically today we just want to ask you, like, a couple questions about gender relationships and, like, in Islam, because it's kind of like a taboo topic. We don't really, like, talk about it, and especially, like, growing up. And then when it's, like, you're at that age to get married, everyone's just like, okay, get married. But, like, we don't know anything about it, and we're just, like, kind of thrown into that, like, circle after being told not to, like, talk to the opposite gender for all of our lives. So the first, yeah. Exactly. So basically the first question we have for you is kind of talking about, like, female sexual desire, and because this is also, like, rarely discussed in our communities, so our listener wanted to know if it was wrong to feel desire or want to be desired by the opposite gender.
No, that's a part of your fitrah, so that's a part of the inner workings. Fitrah is an Arabic Islamic term meaning the natural state in which you were created. So a part of feeling desire and having the ability to have pleasure during sex is like a gift from God. That's a mercy from God. And that's why Muslims believe that the act of sex itself is an act of worship. It's a sign of gratitude for what God has given you. All the things that are worship oriented are gratitude oriented. That's something I have to first explain. So, like, when people use that word, that term kafara, for example, for kufar or kafir, somebody who is not in belief, in a state of belief, the real Arabic term for that actually means ingratitude. So that means that when you are a person of gratitude, that means that you are a person of belief. And when you're a person of a lack of gratitude for things in your life, then you slip into a state of non-belief or disbelief. So that's a very big statement. When you think about the way that we're taught our religion, or the way that we're taught about some natural states that we're born into, things that we can't control, whether that be the menstrual cycle that a woman has to deal with. Some people think that's like some kind of punishment for women, when it's not a punishment for women. And even during the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam's time, like, having such a close relationship with his wife, even when she was on her cycle, is an attempt to show, like, she's not dirty, she's not broken, there's nothing wrong with her. And seeing all of the amazing parts of a Muslim woman's body, right, of a person's body, as a part of the miracle of the creation itself and as a mercy. So whether that be, you know, having a break from praying or fasting when, you know, your body is going through that, or when you're breastfeeding, or when you're pregnant, because you have a life-creating force inside of you. And part of that life-creating force is to have desire, or to desire intimacy with, you know, with someone else. That's all natural, and that's beautiful. And the only thing that you know, you have to think about is, you know, how do we seek a means that is pleasing to God to fulfill our natural state? How do we seek a means that is both pleasing and agreeable to our Lord, that shows our gratitude for that mercy that he's created in us? So that's what I would tell that person. And a part of that is seeking, obviously, a marriage union. Muslims believe that that is the way to access intimacy. But if you can't seek that kind of union, there are ways that the Prophet Muhammad taught us about how to harness that kind of energy, right? Like sexual desire or sexual energy. And a part of that is fasting, right? Taking the time to sit and to fast and to ask God for what you want and to reflect about, you know, the things that maybe you don't have in your life, but also to be thankful for the things that are going great in your life. To obviously talk to the people around you, have a sense of community, create a sense of service, having discipline. Also, if you look at so much of scholarship around ihsan, or the purification of someone's soul or spirit, is trying to keep these kinds of desires at bay or in a healthy space helps you become a more focused human being. I mean, helps you become a disciplined human being that will one day produce something amazing. And we have so many books and inventions and thought leaders of our community that did that. So I would say that there's some different ways that you can harness that energy if you cannot find a halal means. But everyone, I'm just such a big proponent of this. Like, I feel like I haven't squarely addressed this on Merry Monday because it's a tough thing to say. But what I'll say is, like, I think that sometimes the Muslim community makes the barriers into the marriage market, like the barriers into entry into that market, just way too high. And I think that they make it almost impossible for someone to seek a halal means to fulfill their natural state, the thing that they were created upon. So I believe in just reducing all those barriers, reducing all of the difficulty, so that people can enter into marriage in a fluid way. And for generations, Muslims were very fluid on marriage practices. You know, it was okay if someone to get married and for things to not work out, or a spouse to die, or someone to die in childbirth. I mean, there were so many factors that led to people having multiple partners in their life, you know, at different stages of their life. And I think that this, like, fairy tale idea that, oh, like, you're like my soulmate, and, like, you know, we're gonna be together forever. I believe in soulmates. So I believe that your soul can connect with a lot of different souls. And I do believe that before time began, where we believe that all souls stood next to each other and attested to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's oneness, to God's oneness. We believe that, you know, when you have a deja vu and you feel like you've met someone that you've known before, it's because you stood beside them, right? So there were mates to your soul. Yes, there were people around you. It's not just one person, like an entire collection. So, I'd like for us to reduce some of that pressure. Like, this is my everything. This is my best friend. This is who I'm going to, like, debate with, but also cuddle with. He's going to also do all my art projects with me, but he's also going to be a really good father. He's going to make all the money. It's like, whoa, 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 whoa. How do we make it such that we're not shouldering too much and not putting too much responsibility on another human being to fulfill parts of our own self-fulfillment, our own happiness that we have to create on our own? That's a long answer to a simple question.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. That was a great answer. And I think so many things that, like, haven't been talked about. So thank you so much for sharing that. And I know you talked a little bit about how you have a background as a matchmaker and how you did work in that area. So I think our next question kind of fits right in with that. So this person wanted to know, how should someone get to know someone else if dating is not allowed in Islam?
Yeah, so we have to kind of unpack the word dating. So the reason that if you ever heard your parents or your community say dating is not allowed in Islam is because the way that that word dating enters into our understanding within American context is not allowable in our religion. So that would include, you know, dating today obviously wasn't like dating 50 years ago or 100 years ago. Courtship is really what we do if we're following the guidelines that are agreed upon for a majority of those who interpret our faith, and that is to maintain a physical barrier between you and that individual that you're talking to, your potential spouse, until there's a marriage union between you, until there's an understanding, and it's a public understanding. It's something that people know about and that your families hopefully rejoice in. So I think that the best way to do that is to ask, you know, good questions that are related to your core values. So I talk about this a lot. I look at my story highlights, IG story highlights, on Yasmin's IG to learn more about how to figure out what your core values are, like what makes you tick. You got to figure that out. And I think that you can really actually create a lot of emotional intimacy with somebody that doesn't involve any physical touch. And that is proven by our deep relationship that we can have with the mentors in our lives, the deep emotional connections that we have with our work colleagues, the deep emotional connections that we have with people that we go to school with, that we never have any kind of, we don't have a sexual relationship with them, and we don't have a physical relationship with them. And yet, man, it can be deep. And you can feel an affinity, a deep affinity and a deep respect for someone. So I think that when I always tell this to people, you know, when they're approaching someone with the idea of getting to know them a little bit better in terms of dating, if you want to use that term loosely, always try to figure out, you know, what you need to go in knowing what's important to you, what are my core values. And then you need to be asking questions that are associated with, does this person align with me on a core value level? But I think before you get to that stage, you have to first see, does this person remind me of the people that I respect, that I work with? Does this person remind me of the people that I love, that I have very deep connections with, either that I went to school with or that are in my family? Do they remind me of home? Do I feel comfortable with this person? Do they make me feel as though I have to be on my toes, like I can't be myself, or I'm scared to say something and they make me feel small or insignificant? I think those are the kinds of questions you should be asking yourself. And I think you derive that by asking good questions about someone's upbringing, you know, what makes them tick, how they feel about like certain concepts that, you know, they're very passionate about or that they feel are very important to them and drive their life. And that's how I think you get to that discussion. But you first have to say, like, do I want to build something with this person, with this somebody or not? Can I actually build something with them? Do they feel like someone that I could have like a partnership with? Can I trust them and trust their judgment? I think those are the kinds of questions you can ask. And I don't think that any of that requires a physical relationship or, you know, to have sex with somebody or to make out with them to figure those things out. And I think that, you know, we're human, we're going to make mistakes. People make errors all the time, but we believe that the more that we are in line with what is pleasing to God, the more gratitude that shows in our life, then there's going to be more blessing in our life. Direct correlation from the amount of gratitude that you show to the way that God has created you and the rules and the boundaries in which he's given you to create a more dignified version of yourself, a more beautified version of yourself, then we believe that that will correlate directly into extra blessing in your life, barakah in your life, and the opening of the correct doors and the bringing of people into your life that bring you closer to God.
I don't know. I think that's like super important. Like how you were saying, like, you know, we first need to build a personal connection, and like just mentioning that, like, you know, do you feel safe with that person? Or like, do you feel like you can be completely yourself? Because right. I feel like we could take that into like all of our relationships too. And like, it'll just make things easier. But I guess like one issue that I feel like young Muslims face, like when they are approaching marriage, is the person that they choose to like, I guess, get to know or whatever. And they might like have different cultural backgrounds or they're from like a different race. And that kind of like makes it a little bit harder for them, just because I feel like in our society now, like even in our Muslim societies, although we feel like, you know, everyone is equal and like, Islam is for everyone, when it comes to getting to know someone or getting married, then like all of those values kind of go out the door in some like situations. Yeah. And like people are like, no, like you need to get married from someone like just from your culture or like things like that. Even if it's like Arabs towards Arabs, like I don't know. I feel like it gets complicated. So how do you think someone should approach that if they're put into that situation?
So I think things are changing. I think parents are finally kind of waking up to the idea that putting these artificial barriers is increasing the barriers to the entry into the marriage market that we discussed earlier. So it's like making things more difficult for someone to seek a halal means that is pleasing to God, you know, to enter into a union. So I really think that I talk a little bit about this on also my story highlights and stuff that you can check out for Marriage Mondays, but getting parents on board, you know, when they are dead set against an idea about somebody, it's like two ways. You have to really listen to what they're saying, you know, record it. You got to take time to reflect on it. And what is not Islamic or what is not, you know, spiritually driven, you have to identify. And I think that the best way to go about, you know, dealing with those things is to seek an ally, someone that they often, you know, your parents have to respect in order to enter into the conversation. And especially if there are issues about spirituality, again, things that are not associated with the religion or things that are not associated with building like a strong, stable, spiritually steadfast family, those things have to be called out. And I think that can happen through, you know, maybe leadership at your local place of worship. It can be some leadership outside of that. Maybe that you can connect with spiritual leadership online or from different forums or different conferences, different areas that gathers those kinds of thought leaders. But it could also be a couple that, you know, you really respect that also shows maybe a cross ethnic or a cross cultural marriage that is really working. That can often help, you know, persuade parents who feel like this is never going to work or this is, you know, this is terrible for us. And even if you can employ the ally in terms of a family member, it's even better. So if you have an uncle or an aunt or a grandma or a cousin that can talk to them and say like, look, this is the way things are. If you're blocking this for these superficial reasons, this may cause a lot of resentment and it may actually ripple into a lot of like forbidden activity and things that are not good for your child or good for their akhira, for the next life. And to remind people, I think the spiritual reminders are very strong, but I think seeing practical examples are also very helpful. So that would be my recommendation. And I think that, I'm seeing it change. I really am. I'm seeing parents that were just so like, no, only Syrian, like, no, only Indian, no, only Eritrean. They're suddenly like, you know what? Okay, maybe an Afghan is going to marry a non-Afghan. Maybe this Libyan is not going to marry another Libyan. I know. Like, you know, it's crazy. And their brains are being expanded. My hope is that their heart is being expanded. We just don't live in that, you know, in the United States. Did you know that Muslims are the most ethnically diverse faith group in all the United States? So the ISPU data, the Institute of Social Policy and Understanding from 2019 shows this, that we are an amalgam of, you know, people from different parts of the Asian subcontinent, part of Central Asia into the Middle East, Africa, people from Indonesia, people who are African American, you know, their people were stolen from the land of Africa and have been transplanted into the United States. And we have all of these amazing, rich traditions. And so we're in diaspora people. So the more that we are focused on like our own, only our own people and only of this certain age and only this certain height and only this certain skin color and only this certain wealth, I feel like we're just missing out on so much beauty and so much diversity that already exists in our communities. And it's just going to continue to become more diverse. There's just going to be more mixing that's going to happen. And that's a part of us being dispersed throughout the United States. So we got to wake up to this new reality. I know it's hard for some parents to hear. I know it's hard for some families to hear. But I think that a lot of spiritual leaders will say the right thing. If they're really following the basis of the faith, you would see, and I talk about this in my Marriage Mondays, that a lot of the, you know, a lot of the way that Islam spread was through interpersonal relations. You know, people would marry people outside of their culture and that, and they'd learn more about the religion and they'd see someone's upstanding character and it changed their minds about things. And I just feel like we can continue to be a part of that really beautiful story if we just allow ourselves some expansion of the heart and the mind.
Yeah, for sure. And I really love how you talked about expansion of the heart too, because I think so much of it is people are like, oh, like you just have to be more open-minded, and we always like focus on the mind, but I think like expanding your heart too, and so then like, you know, it's not just that you're more accepting of like, oh, letting your child like marry someone else, but also of just like how you have relationships with other people. So ultimately, I think I really like how you highlighted how it's like beneficial in every aspect of life, not just in terms of, you know, a relationship between people, like a romantic relationship between people. Feel like that was, you know, something that I feel like a lot of people really needed to hear, because I think that's something a lot of people struggle with, especially people that are like in their early 20s or kind of like approaching the age where like people are like starting to like nag at them and be like, okay, it's like time to start thinking or whatever. So someone else asked us, what is the right way for a Muslim guy to approach a girl? So once you're like at the age, what is the right way to approach someone?
So I really feel that the best way is encompassed in some of our tradition. And I think it's one that is like timeless, which is to send an emissary. Send someone who knows the both of you, someone that you can trust to scope it out. Now, some people will approach directly, okay? And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with approaching someone that you're interested in directly. I just think that sometimes people can, especially if they don't really know you and you're just going off some photo that you saw online or some, you know, someone said something about that person's family. So, you know, well, that's, I think, a much more reduced, you know, version of like our, you know, our reality. I think what's actually happening is that people are finding people online and they're just like cold DMing them or just like, you know, Facebook friending them. And you could do that. I'm not saying that you can't do that. I just think that it is not the most pragmatic or most political way to approach it. I think the best way is to try to, and I think it's a protective way too for you, especially as a man, so that it doesn't seem like you're like, oh, here's this creepster. He's like he's sliding into my DMs, right? Like, so that people can like just stop saying those things. If your intention is really clear, you could be a slime ball, you could be. But if your intention is clear, which I'm assuming, you know, this gentleman who's asking is coming from a very beautiful, good place, then I think the best thing to do is to involve any third party that might know them that you know. And if there's absolutely no connection whatsoever, then I think you can be really respectful. If there's like no, you know, mutual friend or mutual connection that can talk, you can be smart about it by being very respectful in your approach. And you can simply say like, hi, I know this is unorthodox, you know, or I know that, you know, maybe lots of people are in your DMs. I just want to tell you, like, my intention is not to just like play around. Like, my intention is real. It's for something that's a like a long lasting commitment, but I don't know you. I'd like to see how that goes. And if you'd be open to, you know, getting to know me. I just feel like some girls still shoot people like that down. I think sometimes it's a little bit easier if the guy knows not a mutual friend, but knows a woman who's married, who they trust. They can often have that woman reach out to that young woman that he's interested in. And it's a lot less, I don't want to say threatening. It's not like he's threatening, but it's just, it's a lot less pressure, I think, for a girl sometimes just to respond to another woman. And instead of, you know, getting any kind of like bad vibe from a guy, like, oh, he's just creeping. Like, oh, he doesn't even know me. He's just trying to holler at me or whatever. Like, I don't even know him. Instead, if a woman that young man trusts, I think preferably somebody who's married, doesn't always have to be, that's not a, you know, a requirement, but someone that you trust who's a little bit older, who has some kind of wisdom, who has been married, you know, for many years, someone that you can trust to protect your interests, I think that's the best way. And then that woman can approach. And that's, I mean, you know, Khadija radhiyallahu anha was a woman who approached the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, right? And she sent an emissary, she sent a friend. And she sent someone that she trusted, right? And that woman was very pragmatic. She was political. And when she met with the Prophet Muhammad said to him, she was like, what if I told you that there was a lady, that there was a girl? I mean, she, even the way she did it was so cute. She was like, and I feel like that's something I can relate to. Like, when I'm listening to this, like, yeah, I do that all the time. Like, if there's a girl and I know that she might be interested in a guy, I think it's hard for a girl to go directly. I think it's always best that she get you know, somebody else involved. Of course you can go directly. I'm not saying you can't. I just, you know, I don't think it's always the most pragmatic or political way. But the way that she painted this picture about Khadija, and she didn't even mention her name. You know, she just said, like, what if I told you there was a girl who was like these characteristics? Like, would you be interested? And he's like, there's a girl like that? Who? You know? So cute. So anyways, and she's like, yeah, it's Khadija. You know, she said her name, you know, at the end. Like, she just wanted to test the waters to see if she painted a picture of somebody. Women can do that too. And by the way, I mean, a guy, if a woman is trying to approach a man, of course she can go through a guy as well. Like, she can send a male emissary. And I think somebody preferably who's married, who's established, somebody who has some kind of wisdom so that to protect you. It could be, you know, it could be your brother-in-law, for example, if you have a sister. It could be a cousin. It could be, you know, just someone that you know has your best interest in mind. It could also be a family friend or whatever. So that's my recommendation of how to go about it. And of course, you can always approach respectfully, directly. I just think that, I don't know, I feel like our maturity level is a little bit off. And so I think some people still don't take that well all the time. Some do. And if they do, that I think that means that that speaks volumes to their maturity. And I think that if someone is coming to you and writing to you that way, like, give them a chance. You know, that's what I would like to say to people. And someone saying, like, hey, like, I'm not trying, you know, I'd like forever, but I don't know if forever is going to be with you. I'd just like to explore, you know, where things might go. I think people are always more receptive to the idea of, like, exploration, right? Like, I'm just trying to explore things with you. I don't know where they'll go, but my intent is not to play around. My intent is actually for something real and meaningful. Basically, my intent is not to just be intimate with you without a real commitment and without a real union.
I think that's why, like, sometimes, like, girls, if someone, like, messages them, they're kind of like, oh, like, no, like, maybe he's a creep or whatever, because I feel like the intentions of people nowadays are just, like, all over the place. So you never know if the person that you're talking to is, like, serious or, and I feel like a lot of times, yeah, like, Muslim girls have this thing that's like, no, like, don't do that. Your reputation is going to be ruined. So, like, if someone is coming to you and trying to, like, get to know you, you don't know if they're, like, someone who's trying to ruin your reputation or if it's, like, someone who's serious about it. And I feel like it's, like, really confusing. So at the end of the day, like, personally, like, for girls, I guess they're just like, oh, well, I don't know what to do with this information, you know? So I think, like, personally, if it was from a third party, like, when I get to that age, I would be, like, more receptive just because a lot of things that we hear about or, like, just things that we're told from our parents, which I feel like we should start changing. But I think both, like, genders need to, like, get their act together. I think that's, like, the problem.
They do. They need to get their act together. They both genders need to get some maturity. We have, unfortunately, a lot of, like, 20 somethings that are not just not mature at all. And there's lots of reasons for that, like the coddling that society does and this extension of adolescence and this extension of, like, I know you're still young, like, mm-hmm. What responsibilities, and, like, adulting and, like, you know, basically trying to delay adulting. But what I was going to say is that when you have a third party involved, I think it protects both parties, because just in case anyone thinks that you're like, you have weird intentions, when you send somebody who has, I think, who's established, who's a little bit older, who has lived life, you know, and they're approaching, then you know that also that's the witness to what's going on and isn't, you know, and if someone says, oh, but you did this and you said that, well, there's a witness there to actually say, no, like, that's not how it went down. This person wasn't just trying to hit it and quit it. Like, that's, you know, the intention was actually pure. So I just think it's very protective. It's like having that third party or that third person in the room, especially on texts and DMs and stuff, because what do people do? They screenshot everything. They will screenshot everything. So I think also, like, young people don't necessarily always, I think some people are very, like, flippant and they'll just write whatever. I think some people are, you know, they'll try to have the vanishing mode, you know, like these vanishing messages and all this stuff. People can still screenshot, you know what I mean? And it's just scary. It's just like, it's kind of like a scary world. So I pray that through the navigating of this process that you guys, you know, do do have a good support structure and a support system. I don't think it has to be big. I don't think you need to have like more than three people involved in your business, but maybe you should have like one, two, up to three people that kind of are looking out for you, and that you can rely on kind of in like a rotating basis to assist with these kinds of inquiries and to see if someone is actually serious or not. To protect what you write to. Like, oh my God, Samira Qureshi just did this awesome thing about sexting that I just loved. And I think everyone should watch it. You know, it's about sexually, it's called Sexual Health for Muslims is her IG handle. And it's just so good. And she comes from like a very grounded place. I know her, I know her husband, and respect her immensely. And she's seen a lot. And so she's talking about, you know, what do people do when they get sexually explicit messages in their DM? You know, especially maybe in the first couple messages, things were okay. And then things went way off the rails. And then that person feels like maybe receiving those messages, like, I don't want to seem like a prude, or I don't want to close this door to like this guy that's into me or whatever, you know? And she, I think she does a really good job talking about how to navigate that space. Anyway, that's all I want to add about that, guys, because I was just thinking about that with the DMs, because there's lots of crazy stuff that goes on in the DMs.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that leads like right into another question that someone asked us, kind of talking about DMs, is someone asked, what is the Islamic perspective on casually talking to someone to get to know them before marriage? Is it considered haram to talk to someone, i.e. via social media or text, if your parents are unaware?
That's a great question. That's a great fiqh question. So that's a jurisprudential question. I feel like you do need to speak to somebody who's a, you know, a scholar that you can trust to ask them about that. But I will say that the scholars I've consulted about that, you know, the key is, what is the tenor of your conversation? You know, how are you speaking? If it's, you know, if it's casually talking with the intent, knowing if it's casual talk just for casual talk, you should be wary of that for lots of reasons. Because you know, if you do you need more guy friends? Like, what do you want exactly? How are you spending your time? Like, that's what I first want to ask you. I don't think guys and girls can really be friends. That's my opinion. I have a Merry Mondays about that. It's called Guy Girlfriends. And I talk all about how I'm like, no, like a sustained conversation going on with a guy, between a guy and a girl, especially at a certain time, especially when, you know, your guard is down and then more things are said and more and more and more and more and things are said that probably shouldn't be said. And then there's pictures that are being, you know, shared between you. That's when it becomes unequivocally problematic, right? It's like, there's no equivocation there. But I think that if you're getting to know somebody with that purpose for marriage, I think it's okay to talk to them just to see if there's like a baseline compatibility with them. But I always believe that the thing about the haram halal thing when it comes to parents is like, you need to know your parents. Like, do they say like, you're not allowed to talk to anybody without my permission? Because then going against their wishes could enter you into a state of haram, right? Into a state of haram. So the reason this question is complicated is because it deals a lot with your relationship with your parents and what your parents' expectations are of you. But I deeply believe that, like in my bones, that I think if two people have never talked ever, they don't know if they're going to get along at all. They should at least talk. And I think this, I have a three conversation rule, like just talk on three occasions, if possible by video, if possible, or in person. And I know people are like, video, what? That's cray cray. Like, I'm gonna just text her. Like, I know, because of maturity problems. We have maturity problems. But if you have three conversations with that person, after that third conversation, I think that's when you decide to talk to your parents and say, okay, I met somebody. This is how I met them. I met them online. You know, I'm sorry if you're disappointed in me or whatever, but I just wanted you to know about this at this stage. I think that that's a more tenable process, because I think sometimes when people tell their parents right at the outset, there's a lot of pressure and a lot of questions that you don't know how to answer. And you have no idea if you're going to get along with that person or not. And they're already just like honed in on their family and this and that. But look, some parents are feel very, very keenly invested in the marriage process for their children, and they will not allow their children to speak to people without their express permission. And I think if you fall into that category, like, don't play with fire, like, let your parents know. But I would pick the parent that's more easy to talk to, more easygoing. I would explain to that parent that, like, you don't know anything about this guy, or you don't know anything about this girl, and you're just trying to figure it out, and you need to have at least 3 conversations to see if there's something there. So that's what I would do. I also think that the younger you are, the more protective your parents are. I think, like, past 25, that's hard, man, to, like, always get your parents' permission before you talk to anybody. I feel like that's a little bit just not realistic. I think, like, before age 25, parents always want to get involved, like, from the outset. And by the way, some people, even into their 30s, they want to involve their parents. Like, they want to. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't want anyone to think that it's weird to talk. No, like, that's great if you have that relationship with your parents. And they're not going to make you feel that undue pressure to get them an answer. Or they're like, how are things going? What's going on? What's up? You know, have you guys talked about rings yet? You know, like, if you know that that's not going to be the case, then that's cool. If you got chill parents, or, you know, parents that are kind of more, they're not intrusive on this process, because I think the process in the beginning is very delicate. It's very delicate. So, you know, I think, again, the decorum, how you speak to somebody, I think is a big part of the haram halal debate. If you're speaking in haram terms, you're talking about nasty haram things, you're sharing pictures that are haram, then you know what's haram. But my issue is that we can talk to, like, Jason in her class every single day casually and have a great relationship with him. But it's like the minute that we talk to Omar, we just fall apart. It's just like, no, I can't casually ever talk to him. Well, Omar is an option. He's a real option. Yeah. Okay, you want to go talk to your parents about it? All right. Oh, they said no because Omar is still in college. Okay, you're stuck. So, careful line to tout. Talk to a spiritual scholar, somebody who has understanding of fiqh, of what is haram and halal within a specific school of thought that you follow, to see, to, you know, do a sanity check. But I think you know when things are inappropriate. You know when things are getting inappropriate. So try to dial it back before it gets there. Especially, like, you know, like, can I just say this? Like, don't give away commitment, like, emotional help and emotional support for free. So, like, lots of people do this. They do emotional work for people. They're, like, there for them. They're, like, with them through every struggle and this and that, and they have no commitment from that person. There's no investment from that person in your life. So I just want to tell women, especially, that stop doing that work for free. But also to guys who are friends with these girls who are, like, always friend zoning you, and you're, like, the nice guy who's, like, giving them a helping hand and helping them move, or, like, helping give them advice about something, and yet they haven't committed to you. So I don't know. I don't think guys and girls can be friends. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. My mom doesn't either. But yeah, I feel like at the end of the day, like, in our gut, we know whether what we're doing is, like, acceptable to us and, like, our boundaries, but sometimes we want to ignore them just so that we could have, like, that little sense of, you know, I don't know, happiness for a little bit, but it's not going to last a long time.
Yeah. Like a thrill. It's like a thrill. Like, oh my God, I know I'm doing something wrong.
Exactly.
Woo! Yeah. You know. But it's fleeting, like you said, it's fleeting.
Yeah, and Yasmeen, I really like how you talked about, too, how, you know, kind of, like, use your own judgment, and, like what I'm just saying, like, I think everyone internally knows, like, I think sometimes we overcomplicate it, and we're like, oh my God, like, whatever, but it's, like, at the end of the day, like, you know what you're doing, and you know why you are, like, deep down, so just, like, asking yourself and, like, being honest is important. And I think also I like how you kind of talked about, like, establishing, like, a baseline first, too, because I think something that scares, at least, like, from seeing, like, people that are, like, my age, like, in college, and, like, people that are, like, graduating college and stuff, like, something that scares them is that I think in the Muslim community, we often talk about relationships only in the context of marriage. Like, we're, like, if you are going to talk to someone, like, you're going to get married, like, and that scares people because they're, like, does that mean everyone I talk to, I'm going to marry them, you know? So I think that that's
like such an important point, because I think I see a lot of people getting scared or getting pushed away from the idea of it because they feel like there's so much pressure and there's so much, like so many questions being asked from the beginning, and like, oh, like, you know, you should talk to someone for a week and then find out if you're going to be married. But I really like your perspective on it.
Crazy. Yeah, I think it's crazy. And I think that baseline is how, you know, we have our guard down so that we can just first just assess, is it easy to talk to this person? You know, do I feel comfortable sharing with them? And the reason I say the video interface or meeting them in person to have those three conversations, the reason I say that for that baseline is because I think there's lots of people who fall in love with text messages or like someone's voice. And it's like, you can think about all those things, right? But when you're in front of somebody, it's a completely different dynamic. Like people are no longer as brave maybe as they once thought they were, or you realize you're not attracted to that person really. Like there's not like any kind of physical, like you don't want to be near them. You don't want to touch them, you know? And that you just know. So, okay, like that's hard. You know what I mean? That's hard to know without making eye contact. And, you know, and I feel like our younger generation is not good at making eye contact, but there, you know what I mean? There's a lot that goes on there. When you, you know, and you know, we have this obviously this ghadd al-basar, which is to lower the gaze. But the idea there is not to mean that you can't look someone in the eye. Lowering the gaze means that if you are like lusting over someone, it means to look away so that you can see who they really are. That's what that means. It doesn't mean that you can't look someone in the eye to have a conversation with them to see if it's someone that you want to build something with. And instead of being like, this is going to be the father of my children, this will be the woman who will, you know, she'll mother the babies that I make with her. Like, instead of like going there, I want to be like, could I complete a project with this person? Do I feel like I can rely on their judgment to give me a deliverable, you know, at work? Is this someone that I'd want to be in a group discussion with at school? Like, those are the kinds of questions I think that you should be asking yourself in the beginning. Is this person giving me an opportunity to talk? Do they keep interrupting me? Do they say they're going to do something and then not do it? And I, like, for example, I'm going to meet you at 3:00. They never show up, right? Or they show up at 4:30. I don't know. I didn't want to make it like 3:30 because our people do show up at 3:30 when they say 3:00. They do. They show up even at 4:00. I said 4:30. I like took it like an hour and a half. But you know, if someone is or ghosting, you know, if someone is ghosting you and stuff, like I feel like that, you know, that shows a lot about someone's character. I know somebody who will get hurt from ghosting, but I just want you guys to know, like, if someone is ghosting you, you've got your answer. It's just so clear. Like, why do you want to invest in someone who's not even going to give you that decency and that respect? So just understand that ghosting, when someone does that, it's like, door closed, thanks, bye. Like, it's just so clear. So you can move on. Know that you can move on.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess kind of like to wrap up, like you said so many things that I think are just like such like gems of wisdom. So I guess to like kind of like wrap up, if you could give advice to your younger self, your 20-something-year-old self, or your whatever, college age, late high school, whatever, what would you say?
I'm 35. I'm 35. So yeah, so you can say my younger self. I'm old as hell. Colin. Self-worth is God-granted. So God created you so worthy and so perfect and so beautiful. And so don't try to seek that worth from other people. I think you'll be hurt in the long term because you'll be seeking their approval or their validation when you really need to be seeking God's approval and God's validation because he created you very lovingly. So I think if you're, you know, if you're in a state where you know that you're in a state of trying to please your Lord, I think that you're set. And so it also will help you realize that if someone enters into your life and they're bringing you further away from that, they're not good for you. Everyone, anyone, romantically or otherwise. And the people who are bringing you closer to that relationship with what is eternal, what is so lasting and what's going to be permanent and the goodness that's inside of you and sees the goodness that's inside of you and puts that out first and constantly reminding you of the hope in God. Those are the people that you hit your wagon to. And so, you know, you've got to be oriented that way on your all by yourself on your own to know, so that when someone comes into your life and they seem they're hot, they're educated, they're whatever, they're this, they're that, but they are Debbie Downers, man. Like, they just complain about everybody in their lives. They don't treat people that they think are below them very well, in whatever way. They look down upon them because of race or because of class or because of whatever it might be, education. Understand that even if the outer stuff looks really good, that inner stuff is what is going to determine whether or not you're actually going to be that best version of yourself, that version that like celebrates your self-worth. So just get in touch with that, hold on to that. I think that becomes like an energetic magnet to the right kinds of energies in your life. And then hopefully you can repel those other kind of like, always got a problem, always have an issue, it's always somebody else's fault, blaming everybody, I'm the victim, oh my God, the world's against me kind of people. Because those people are just going to drag you down. Or like, live it up, it's all good, do whatever you want. That's not good either, because that's somebody who's not in line with an understanding of God's, of hudud, of boundaries around our behavior. So we have to strike the balance from somebody who's just like 100% carefree. No, a Muslim has care. A Muslim takes concern. A Muslim is concerned about the people around them, but the Muslim does not incessantly complain and bring people down. You know, they have hope in their Lord. So, you know, inshallah, once you tap into your own self-worth, it'll help you understand that the people around you are going to help, like, remind you of the good things in your life. That's all. That's all I want to say. That's my big, because I did not love my, I was 23 when I first got married. I had very low self-worth, very low self-worth. I believed that I was smart, and I believed that, you know, I was a person who cared about God, but I didn't think I was beautiful or worthy, or I didn't think any of those things, because my parents never said those things. They weren't like, you're beautiful. My parents were Arab. They were like, you're smart. Okay, you make prayer, it's good. Alhamdulillah, you're good. But it was like, then it was just so easy, because I didn't have that self-worth about myself. It was so easy that the first guy who was like, you're pretty, I was like, what about me? Is that pretty? You know, like tripping over myself that somebody was seeing worth in me. Like, no, bump that. No, like, you are so beautiful. And so whole. And so if somebody else sees you and like, you don't trip over yourself. Don't trip chocolate chip because somebody notices you. Notice yourself first.
We all needed to hear that. Like, seriously, we all needed to hear that.
Yeah, we need to like put that on repeat, loop, everyone, add it to the Spotify soundtrack.
But you know, like, man, I lived that in my 20s, bruh. I lived that. And then then suddenly, like, after I got divorced, I was like, oh, like, I'm actually, like, I got a party going on inside. Like, God created me with, like, a whole party. There's, like, there's so much, like, activity inside. There's so much possibility. There's so much potential. There's so much good. If somebody wants to come to my party, they can. But, like, not everybody's invited. Not everybody's invited. And you got to be worthy of entry, you know. And I could share it with you, but, like, you got to also be bringing something to the table. It can't be one-sided. You can't be just hogging my party up. Like what about your party? You got one? You know, do you have something to contribute to this? And are you a person of hope and of increasing value to the people around you? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's all I want to say. I know it was I'm just so long-winded. I am so annoyingly long-winded.
I really enjoyed it. And like, that's why I think it's like, I'm just so happy that you mentioned self-worth, because I feel like before, you know, pushing girls to get married at a young age and like making that a priority, we need to prioritize like showing girls what they're capable of and letting them like chase their dreams and like see who they are as an individual. Because I feel like sometimes we're taught that when you get married, you can do this, this, and this, and this. And then like, Yeah, like you become like more of a complete person. But I'm so glad that this is the advice that you gave us, because like first we need to see like what's up with me, and then we could see like what's going on with other people.
Yeah, and when we say that the religion, when we say that you know, your marriage is half your deen, it's not because you're missing half of your deen. That's not what's going on. It's not because you're a missing person and you need to be made whole. If the reason they say it's half your deen is because the other half that you learn all by yourself gets put into action. It's tested when you get married. So you can talk all you want, but can you walk the walk when the pressure's on? You know, being in partnership with someone is beautiful. It's not easy. And it's not going to open every single door in your life, especially, I know, Arab girls, I know, like, when I get married, I'm finally going to be able to insert every single dream she's ever had in her life. And I just want you to know, like, no, girl, like, you can have all sorts of dreams and aspirations and things that you fulfill on your bucket list that have nothing to do with anybody else, that your self-worth is intact. I'm going to, you know, this is a big message, the one about Arab girls, because a lot of them, you're right, are restricted so heavily before marriage. And it's like, nah, you can't do this. Nah, you got to wait till you're married to do that. And so it makes marriage into this thing that it's like, it ain't even that thing. When you get married, there's so many other restrictions that enter your life, not because, you know, somebody's restricting you per se, but because now you're responsible for this whole other person, you know, like, oh, now I got to meet your needs and you've got to meet my needs and we've got to do this. And it's just too much, guys. It's too much. So yeah, live your life and be happy. And when you're happy and you're not like desperate for like that someone to see you, for that validation, that hit like a drug when a guy notices you, like if you're not desperate for that, trust me, it'll come a lot more naturally. I promise you. So thank you guys for your time. This is lovely. I am really excited to be doing some real talk for some real Muslims.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your time. We really appreciate it.
Okay, I heart you all. Have an amazing day, you know.
You too. Thank you so much.
Okay, so we hope that you guys enjoyed listening to Yasmeen or Yas Guru talk to us. I really enjoyed recording this episode with her and honestly learned so much, and love that she was able to give us like her insight and knowledge from her own personal life experience, and that she was also willing to give such great advice. Like, I feel like this episode was something that not only like was really important for me to personally hear, but I just think that these conversations aren't really had in our community that much. And when they are had, they're often, you know, discussed in like very small circles, and that information isn't really shared with a lot of people. So I really, really enjoyed this episode.
I definitely agree with Rowan. And I also think that the piece of advice that she left with us all is to like really cherish who we are and know our self-worth. It's really important, because in a lot of places, like, we aren't taught that, and it's like not the first thing that we're taught as like Muslim girls and stuff like that, and especially with our culture. So I hope that you guys all just like take that to heart and know that you are like worthy and that you like deserve the best, really. So like, don't settle for anything less.
Yeah, and I think her advice, honestly, I mean, like, so many times, like Yasmeen was saying, like, throughout the episode, like, her advice applied to both guys and girls. So regardless of whether you're a guy or a girl listening to this, I think Yasmeen's advice is so good. And I just loved how, like, candid and honest she was, and how, you know, she also has a great personality, guys. Like, when we recorded with Yasmeen, like, her energy just kind of, like, was very contagious and made us feel really good. So I love how candid she was about these things, because I think that those are the kinds of like leaders that we need in our community to talk about these issues. And I think that like, also, I loved how she gave like the Islamic perspective and the Islamic context for so many of it, because that's what we tried to do with this taboo series, was to answer questions from both the perspective of what we experience in our everyday life, and then tie in what our faith tells us about that. Because ultimately, I think that's what this podcast really is about. And what me and Ben try and do with this podcast is we want to talk about our experience as young Muslims, and we both believe that our faith is such an integral part of who we are, and we want it to guide the decisions that we make. So we hope that like this whole taboo series, and in particular this episode, I think was a perfect example of it, as were the other episodes. But it just shows that, you know, in Islam, there's always like an answer to every situation that we face in life. And I think it's about finding the right people to answer those questions for us. So we're just so grateful to Yasmin for answering the questions and to all of our guests for contributing so much to these episodes that I think have really been helpful to me personally.
Yeah, so we really hope that you guys enjoyed this episode and really benefited like Rowan and I did. And so that's all that we have for you guys today. And that's all that we have for you guys from the Taboo series. And we really hope that you guys enjoyed it. And we've been like really excited every time that we hear feedback from you guys. So please keep giving us your feedback, because honestly, that lets us know that you guys relate or don't relate. Whether it's bad or good, we always want to hear from you. So make sure to let us know what you guys think about this episode.
Yeah, for sure. And definitely you guys can connect with us as always on Instagram at Real Talk Real Muslims or on our Facebook page, Real Talk Real Muslims. And you can share and discuss this episode with your friends and family. I feel like this is a great one to listen to with your friends or family members and just have a conversation about the things that we discussed in this episode and the questions that you all submitted to us. And you can also give us any feedback about this episode by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or DMing us on social media. Like Khan said, we absolutely love hearing from you guys. And you can also email us at realtalkrealmuslims@gmail.com.
That's Real Talk Real Muslims for you.
Bye.